And actually, it's kind of cool to think that there still are dogs of war, that they are still used to throughout the various conflicts around the world. Dogs of war, if nothing else, to keep troops company. But there are still those fighting dogs too. That might actually be an interesting book for Adrian Gilbert to write sometime. He is a military historian of the highest order. Probably seen him all over TV. Not to be confused with the other Adrian Gilbert, who writes a lot about the pyramids or about constellations and how they may or may not be interacting with the pyramids. Very interesting work that the other Adrian Gilbert does. And not to be confused with Gilbert Adrian, the Hollywood costume designer. But this Adrian Gilbert is a military historian who's written a new book on the French Foreign Legion. Are they the toughest soldiers ever? Are they the world's most feared fighting force? And why? What is so unique about the French Foreign Legion? Voices of the Legion is the new book. You can link up to that at coasttocoastam.com. But I can't wait to get into it next. Always been fascinated by this organization and all of their secrets coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponet. Well, Adrian Gilbert's written a couple of children's books involving history, but mostly his work involves getting to the root of some of the most fascinating aspects of warfare, including the definitive book on desert warfare, if I remember correctly. Good evening, Adrian Gilbert.
Good evening, Ian. Nice to talk to you.
Love this book. Fascinated by the French Foreign Legion. I may be a total geek, but isn't it the kind of subject where when you bring up the French Foreign Legion, you'll find about 100% awareness that such an organization exists and about 10% of awareness of what it actually is?
Yeah, you're probably right there. It's one of the most sort of glamorous military formations that's really ever been. It has an extraordinary mystique about it, but there's not a great deal of knowledge, I think, by most people of really what the organization is like. It's we've all seen the Beaujeu Geste movies, even if they're the Laurel and Hardy ones, and so I think people are very aware of it. But as we've been just saying, the actual details, I think, are a bit misty in people's minds.
Yeah, as a movie or a cartoon convention. The idea of a character running into trouble and having to escape, and their only option left to them is the French Foreign Legion. That may be all that people really understand about it. And that's only because it's used in movies as a motif. And that's
Yeah.
about it. I mean, there's what exactly, who pays for it, where they fight, other than the idea that they are internationally recognized amongst the elite, most elite of all military men. The French Foreign Legion are looked up to even more as being, would you say that the toughest fighting force?
Well, it's always hard to say. I mean, there are several, might call elite formations around the world, whether you've got some U.S. Navy SEALs or U.S. Rangers or indeed the Marine Corps. You've got various units in the old Soviet Union, now Russia, Spetsnaz, Special Forces, people like that. And in Britain, you've got the parachute regiments and the SAS. And they're all very tough elite formations. And the French Foreign Legion is one of them. I suppose what makes the French Foreign Legion, sorry, so different is really in its title, foreign. Whereas all the other organizations draw their troops from their own country, and they make obviously nationalism an important part of the motivation for the troops. The French Foreign Legion is a French organization, but it takes its men from other countries. The officers are French, but all the rank and file are foreigners. And Frenchmen can actually join, but they can't join as Frenchmen. So they have to sort of go through a rather silly rigmarole of pretending to be French Canadians or Belgians or Swiss or something like that.
Right.
And then they go into the organization. And it's strangeness. It's the only fighting organization of its kind where it makes, a virtue of its foreignness. The Legion motto is "The Legion is our country." And so the Legion distinguishes itself from other fighting organizations by focusing on just the Legion itself. And when you join the Legion, The legions always say, we're not fighting for France, we're fighting for the legion. And that's really, I think, one of the biggest distinctions between the legion and other formations.
Well, here's my argument about that. And I was very interested in reading the book. Again, you can link up to Adrian Gilbert's book at coasttocoastam.com. But unlike the Marines, unlike the Navy SEALs, where you are expected to serve and serve proudly and do fabulous work, and these are all great, you know, highly tuned organizations. But you don't have to lose your old identity to join. And I think at least the part of the legend of the French Foreign Legion is that you leave behind your old self, whoever you were in that previous life, whatever country you came from, whatever you were known for, whatever thought you had accomplished, anything you were wanted for legally, you were a new person. And the Legion, in exchange for this new opportunity, in exchange for the declaration of your new identity and them not asking too many questions, in exchange for that, they owned you. And I thought that that's kind of the difference to me about why people are so willing to fight and die for the Legion and to fight to the last man is, in a way, they were already dead when they walked through the gates. Where are you with that?
Yeah, sure. No, that's a very good point. It's all part of the Legion molds its soldiers very much into Legionnaires, as distinct from anybody else. And the Legion is a real entity into itself. And as you just said, it, in some ways, it gives people a second chance, to make themselves. It's a tough school, but as I said, it's a second opportunity for people who've perhaps fallen on hard times. I mean, the classic story of the man jilted in love or whatever going off to join the Legion is very much the stuff of legend. And the main recruiting master has been poverty. It's where people who really have fallen onto their uppers look for somewhere which gives them meaning to their life. It gives them, as I said, gives them a second chance, and it gives them food and clothing as well.
Well, but it's not uncommon for somebody to have been wanted for a crime,
sure.
Or may have been suspected in a crime, to have disappeared by joining the French Foreign Legion. The trail would end at the gate of the French Foreign Legion.
Yes, that's very true, particularly in the past, where very few questions were asked, and certainly once the man had crossed over the line into the Legion, he would be protected by the Legion, and you know the Legion would prevent further inquiries about this individual. Things have changed a little bit in the in recent times, and the Legion conducts a very rigorous search of all potential recruits about their backgrounds and checks up on everybody, and it won't accept murderers or people who have committed serious crimes. They will be ejected, but certainly if you've say committed minor misdemeanors, the Legion won't mind and will protect you while you were there. But it's certainly, if it's known that you have committed a serious crime like rape or murder or something on those lines, you would be ejected from the Legion.
Today?
Yes, today. But in the past, it was very hard to check up on people. But in the modern world, the Legion uses its own intelligence and also uses the international police organization Interpol to track down the backgrounds of its potential recruits.
And because, I mean, I actually likened once the idea of becoming, of being baptized in the Christian church, in the tradition there, of getting a new name, and all your old self was left behind, and you have, you've been cleansed, and you move forward.
Yeah.
That's a little bit like the French Foreign Legion. That I just thought that was, and in the earliest days of the Christian church, you were actually expected to martyr yourself. You were. The idea that you would live a long, happy life because you've declared yourself to be a Christian was actually counterintuitive, kind of like the French Foreign Legion. You declare yourself a member of the Legion, or you say, I want to join, and you pass through the tests. You are essentially declaring yourself, I'm going to have a short life. I may be killed tomorrow, and you're good with that.
Yes, sure. I mean, you you don't join the Legion to develop your career or to have an interesting sort of extended break from the boredom of everyday life. You've really got to be prepared to accept the possibility, yes, that you could be shot the next day, and no one would be particularly worried about it. It's one of the reasons why the French have always been very keen on the Legion is it's always been able to send it to some of the worst hotspots, fighting hotspots around the world, and there are no mothers and writing to congressmen about their poor boys and how badly they're being treated. They're expendable, the Legion, and so for the French, yeah. It's always been very useful.
And I think it's that expendability that's the difference between this and other elite fighting forces. We love the Marines, and I'm sure that just like the British love SAS or whatever it is that's the equivalent, but we also love them to come back.
Yeah,
and
sure.
With the French, we want as many to live as possible. The French Foreign Legion doesn't seem to be all that concerned about that. The greatest thing you can do in a way is to martyr yourself to the French Foreign Legion.
Yes.
That's the model is the dead soldier in a way.
Yeah, sure. Yes, I mean, the Legion makes a great deal of this. Its most important battle, the Battle of Camarón, which was fought in Mexico in the 19th century. The entire unit was surrounded by a vast Mexican force. There was only a little more than 100 legionnaires surrounded by, I think it was around about sort of 2,000 Mexicans. And the Mexicans kept on asking them to surrender. It was a hopeless battle. There was no way they could win. But the French refused, and they carried on fighting until there were just a handful of them left, and they'd run out of ammunition. And they just said, right, charge, and they threw themselves at the Mexicans and were virtually wiped out. There were a few wounded survivors, and although technically it was a battle lost, it sort of showed the heroism, the refusal to surrender, the refusal to give up, which has always been an important part of the Legion. And on the anniversary of the battle every year, an account is read out to all the troops, and it's the sort of holy day, as it were, to carry on the religious metaphor,
yeah.
Holy day for the Legion.
Yeah, to celebrate the anniversary of what the worst possible defeat.
Yes.
I mean, they celebrate the idea that a small group of the French Foreign Legion was able to hold off this huge Mexican regiment for as long as they did,
yes.
Because they were that good, they were that strong, and they were determined to die fighting. I mean, they ended up having at the end of the battle, what, there were three
three left, yes, who were vaguely standing. Everyone was wounded. And the Mexicans were very gallant about it. They looked after these last few survivors didn't kill them out of hand, which, they might have been expected to do.
Right. And they instead sent them back to France to bring the body of the general back or something.
Yes, their captain, Captain Dongzhu, who was the leader of that little band of legionnaires.
And that's why, Adrian, I said earlier, and I know this will sound like a stretch, but it's why I often think of the French Foreign Legion as kind of a zombie army. They are, that would be the scariest thing to come across an army that was so well trained. And they were so well disciplined, and they were determined that they would never leave their post, and that they were essentially already dead in the sense that
yeah.
They had already left their other lives behind, that they had nothing essentially to live for. And they
sure.
were so in that way, I just think that's the scariest thing about the French Foreign Legion.
Yes.
If I were up against them.
Sure, yes. I mean, there's a real sense that they're lost souls that they passed over. From the living into not exactly the dead, but as you say, a zombie-like
yeah.
Existence, where they know that they're expendable. They know that there's nobody looking after them in the way that, say, the British or American armies can draw. In a sense, they can draw support from that knowledge that everything will be done to try and get them back. Whereas for the Legion, it's been rather different. But I think, in a strange way, they rather revel in that lack of support. They know that, as I said, they are these sort of lost souls who carry on fighting until the end. And I think that's one of the distinctions. And all elite military units like to distinguish themselves from the others, to make themselves different. And they in their training, they try to accentuate this distinctiveness. And but the French Wallonian school has a great advantage because it's so distinct anyway. It hardly needs to work right on that side of things.
Well, and again, there's some other unique aspects to the French Foreign Legion I want to get into throughout the evening, and we'll get to questions later on. And I don't mean to insult anybody else's investment in certainly not the U.S. I'm proud as heck of the Marines and the Rangers and anybody else, but there is just a difference in the French Foreign Legion, and part of that is as you said earlier, it's because it's comprised of groups of foreigners who come together and fight under this banner of the Legion, who are not French but who are guided by the French. What percentage of the French Foreign Legion, say, are American?
It varies a great deal from time to time, and the figures are never solid. It is relatively small. I mean, at a rough guess, it's probably only a few percent at any one time. Certainly, I wouldn't think American numbers have gone much over 5% at any one time. But there always are a few. There always are people from all countries there. I mean, the assessment varies a bit from time to time, but certainly over 100 nations, have been in the Legion at one point or another, and they certainly range across the globe. You'll have Japanese, you'll have Russians, you'll have Americans, you'll have Brits, and they come in phases, and so certain times more people are represented. Germans, oddly enough, although they're a traditional enemy of France, have always been the largest recruiting group.
Yeah, and that is interesting. What about the rumor that a lot of former SS, former Wehrmacht, former Nazi soldiers ended up in the French Foreign Legion after World War II because they didn't have an army to fight for and they didn't have any other place to go?
Sure, that's absolutely right. Yes, it's rather a strange sort of irony that France's former enemy would be providing it with most of its soldiers. I mean, firstly, there's always been a long tradition of Germans leaving their country to join military units. I mean, we British use Germans quite a lot, as you probably know, in your War of Independence as mercenary troops. Hessians, as they're called.
Right.
A tradition was established of Germans leaving home, and the French Foreign Legion was always happy to take them. And there were shortly after the Legion had been formed in 1831, there were large numbers of Germans entering into Foreign Legion service. And it's there's never been a problem. Once you cross into the Legion, you're not fighting for France, you're fighting for the Legion, and people have been able to put aside their traditional enmities by joining the Legion. And just to go back to your question, after the Second World War, there were obviously a large numbers of Germans with no army to join who were who often wanted to escape. The only qualifications they had were soldiers, and so the Legion was an obvious place to go. And certainly the Legion as an organization directly recruited ex-Wehrmacht soldiers. During that period in the late 1940s, there was a huge surge of German troops. Of course, a lot of them fought in Indochina, Vietnam, and again in Algeria.
What about the former SS soldiers, the real, convicted Hitler-loving SS, as opposed to the general Wehrmacht army?
I'd be a little careful. I mean, there have been one or two rather sensationalist books written about this aspect, and I don't think the French would accept the hardest of the SS types with vast strings of atrocities to their name. Certainly there would have been some SS soldiers in the Legion, but I don't think that there were these hardened Nazi types were rejected by the French authorities.
Okay. Because I want to get into that, because again, part of the uniqueness of the French Foreign Legion is that you can lose the trail. You can declare yourself, you can declare an identity and walk through the gates, and you can become a member of the French Foreign Legion if you pass the rigorous mental and physical qualifications. That having been said, I do want to explore some of the stories of which Nazis ended up in the French Foreign Legion. And then you can dispense with that coming up in just a second. Also, I want to get to the discipline story, because since that is, you know, as you said, you know, you can't exactly write a congressman and say, hey, my son is being mistreated in the French Foreign Legion. What are we talking about in terms of mistreatment? How are these soldiers trained? How are they toughened? That's different from other troops around the world. We'll find out next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. So we'll address that where we left it there with Adrian Gilbert, military historian. We're talking about the French Foreign Legion. He has a new book out called Voices of the Legion, and you can link up to that at our webpage at coasttocoastam.com. A lot of mystery around the French Foreign Legion, what they have been responsible for, where they fight, who gets to call upon them. And whether they've ever been rented out by France. We'll talk about that coming up. Where were they during the World Wars? And then the question about how many of the Germans that comprise the French Foreign Legion, and they are the number one foreign or national soldier to join the French Foreign Legion, Germans. Why after World War II did they allow in the people that they'd just been fighting, who just turned right around and joined the French Foreign Legion? And could it be true, this story of the Devil's Guard? Do you have $100 you want to spend on a used book and a hard to find, a rare book? If you got $100, you might be able to find a copy of the out of print book called The Devil's Guard, unless they've reissued it recently. It's the story, the supposed nonfiction narrative of a former Waffen SS soldier who led an elite group of other SS Nazi soldiers in the French Foreign Legion fighting in the jungles of Vietnam. We'll ask Adrian Gilbert about the truth of that coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Well, as we speculated at the beginning of the hour, the words French Foreign Legion, probably known to almost everybody in the Western world, certainly, French Foreign Legion, about 100% awareness of the words French Foreign Legion, about 10% understanding of what they are. They are an army unit of France. However, they are comprised entirely of non-French nationals, people from other countries who join the French Foreign Legion, by and large, no questions asked. They do research now, but I mean, you could have, for most of their history, you could have just been responsible for any number of things, walked up to the gates and said, I want in. What do they call that? Declaring your identity? What's that called, Adrian?
Yes, the declaration. When you first join the Legion, you were always assigned another name, and so you took a new name for a while. And then once you had been in the Legion for quite a while, and they got the measure of you, if you wanted, you could go back to your actual birth name, or if you wanted, you could carry on with your new assumed name. And so I think it's always been quite an important thing of the Legion, is about taking on your identity. You take on a new name, and you're known by that name. And so a lot of people, although they could revert back to their proper name, they just carry on with the name that was given them when they joined.
And never go back to their hometown. They don't ever have to go do anything. They can
Once they've served the Legion loyally and faithfully for 5 years, and it is 5 years, it's not anything less, you're accorded French citizenship. And so, as you say, you could completely reject your previous life. And then when you've left the Legion after 5 or 10, 15, 20 years, you can then become a French citizen and begin a new way of life in France.
And your birth certificate would essentially begin in France the day you were released from the French Foreign Legion.
That's right, yes. Yes, yeah. You then become a new individual.
It's such an unusual process for a fighting unit. I mean, think about that. There's just nothing else like that. Maybe to go back to the Roman legionnaires, where if you served for a period of time as a Roman soldier, then you would become a Roman citizen.
Sure, right? Yes.
I mean, maybe that's the closest that comes to this. But anyway, and then you serve in the French Foreign Legion, and then just to wrap this up, you once you pass through the gate, your old life is dead, and you are expected to die for the Legion. Now, the Legion, the purposes of the Legion, where the Legion will go and fight, that is decided by France. But you're not fighting for France; you're fighting for the Legion. Now, is it ever France will farm out the French Foreign Legion if they want to?
Well, really, it's an agent really of its foreign policy at the hard edge, and at its very origins, I should say, it was farmed out, and the Legion was loaned to Spain in one of the many civil wars that racked that country. And just after it had been formed in 1831, I think it was 1835, the Legion was sent to support one side in Spain, and virtually completely annihilated through disease, hunger, and fighting. But since then, since it's, as it were, returned to the French system, it's remained as part of the French armed forces. And as we've been saying, it often finds itself in the toughest areas, given that not only is it a fine fighting force, its troops are fairly expendable.
Yeah, considered expendable. Now, this is another fact about the French Foreign Legion, that until recently, it was never actually allowed. It wasn't trained on French soil.
No,
it was trained elsewhere, and they were expected to not be in France. It added to their exoticness that they were trained out in the middle of a desert, and that was their home.
Yeah, sure. Yes, I mean, in the 19th century, when all the various European powers decided to grab hold of colonies, the French went due south across the Mediterranean into North Africa, Algeria, which was their first colony, and it was there that the Legion made its home, where all its training was done. And as you say, yes, it gave it a fairly exotic air, and normally the Legion would never actually be in mainland France. It was always based in North Africa and the various other colonies that the French accumulated over the years. That's another thing, of course, makes it rather different.
It wasn't like they were able to sample the Paris nightlife on the weekends.
No, not at all. No, in fact, they did celebrate night. It was rather rough and ready stuff in the various garrison towns in Algeria, where there was a great deal of drinking, really. The Legion really hasn't looked after its traditions in any way. It didn't look after its men particularly well, and their free time was very much their own. And it was sort of the lack of facilities did encourage rather unfortunate tendencies, where the bar and the brothel were the main form of recreation.
But they didn't put up with insubordination. And I think there was a story in the book. Adrian Gilbert's written a new book about the French Foreign Legion. You can find it at coasttocoastam.com. Tell the story of the one guy who decides, I don't remember if he was German or not, but he mouthed off to his French superiors, and they decided that the appropriate punishment, short of shooting him, which they could have done, is they decided to what we would call hogtie him naked. Right? You know the story I'm talking about?
Yeah, well, there were sort of several stories of that ilk. It's called crapaud. And the poor individual is, as you say, hog-tied. He's laid on the ground. His arms are pulled back, and his legs are pulled back too. And they're sort of all tied together. And he's left in that position for hours and hours in the hot sun without anything to drink or any shade. And certainly it was reckoned to be one of the worst punishments that a man could possibly receive. And that sort of punishment like that was fairly rare. It was for somebody who really wouldn't toe the line. But I'm sure one of the things that everyone knows about the Foreign Legion is that discipline is very uncompromisingly tough.
Well, and in one of the versions of that story of the guy having been crapaud, is that he was then placed on a black anthill.
Ah, right. Yes, I've... Yeah, I mean, I sometimes wonder about some of these stories that are a little bit embellished for popular readership.
I totally believe this story. After reading about the French Foreign Legion, I don't doubt the story at all, that this guy had been so unruly that they decided they're going to teach him a lesson once and for all.
Sure, yes. I mean, who knows? Some of the, you know, I'm just a little, unsure of the truthfulness of some of these stories. It is worth noting there's a very long tradition of writing fanciful stories about the Legion because they're very hard to check out, and the Legion itself neither, neither doesn't deny stories or doesn't acknowledge
confirm
them either.
Right.
Yes.
Well,
so,
in this case, I'll tell the story that it's the guy is put on top of a black ant hill. He's covered in black ants, biting ants, these desert ants that are having away with his entire body while he's hog-tied naked in the sun. And his superiors get tired of his blood-curdling screams after an hour, so they decide to take action. So they stuff a rag in his mouth so they can't hear him scream.
Yes.
And they leave him there for the whole night or something?
Yes. I mean, it could be, I mean, depending on the severity of the punishment, but it could be 24 hours or indeed, in some cases, even more. So, yes. Anyway, the people who suffered it thought that was about as bad as it could get.
Everybody is expected to learn French eventually in the French Foreign Legion. You're not expected to know it right out of the box, but you are put in. And the faster you learn French and become fluent in French, the faster you move up in the French Foreign Legion. But to go back to the story about the Nazis and the Devil's Guard, this was a very popular book, some would say myth. It was sold as a nonfiction book, at least at first, about this elite unit within an elite unit, kind of an A-team sort of unit within the French Foreign Legion, all of former SS soldiers who all joined kind of en masse after World War II, and that the Nazis got new identities and became, you know, French citizens after their five-year hitch, and they fought valiantly in the early days of the Vietnam War. True or not true?
I'm afraid to say not true. There's no real evidence to support any of the sort of claims made for this. The French authorities wouldn't have wanted to have had a sort of unit within a unit. They like to maintain their own control over the formation. So I'm afraid it's one of those books, one of the many books on the French Foreign Legion, really, which owes more to fiction than fact. I'm afraid. I hate to
put down
a good story, but I'm afraid.
It is a good story, but the Devil's Guard, as I call it, it is sort of a redemptive story of how these Nazi soldiers ended up, you know, kind of fighting for the good guys, or at least theoretically, or fought valiantly nonetheless. But that doesn't mean that there weren't plenty of ex-Nazis in there, and they demand a level of discipline from every soldier that sort of homogenizes everybody into the French Foreign Legion.
Yes.
How many people of those that sign up for the training, how many people actually make it?
Again, it varies a bit from time to time. Strangely, most do. When a recruit joins the Legion, there's a short period where each assesses the other. The recruit is given a chance to leave after a few weeks. And during these initial few weeks, the Legion looks at the recruit and thinks, is this person going to make it or not? And it will eject people who are not really up to the cause. And in the present day, there are roughly seven people applying for, as it were, each post. So it gives the Legion a chance to reject those that he doesn't think, you know, think up to scratch. And so once it's accepted you into the Legion, you're in, and you know there's no going back. And the Legion does work hard to get people up to a very good standard of physical fitness, which makes them capable of going through the rigorous training that the Legion imposes on its recruits. So it's, you know, as I say, it's a pretty tough thing, but the Legion really does work hard in making sure that everybody sort of passes through.
Where was the French Foreign Legion during World War II? What were they up to?
Well, it was because World War II was a terrible disaster for France, and so the Legion really was also experienced the many problems that the French military went through, because it was based in North Africa, in Algeria, which is its traditional home during this period, and so you had a very unfortunate situation happening where some of the Legion was. In a sense, was fighting on the German side, because when France surrendered in 1940, the new government, Vichy France, became an ally of the Germans. So you had, but at the same time, you had a lot of Frenchmen who left the country to join the Allied cause, fighting on the side of the British and the Americans. And so you had almost two foreign legions going at the same time, one supporting Vichy France, the German side, and one with the Allies. And in one instance, they actually fought against each other in Syria, which was a French possession in that period. There was a large garrison of legionnaires who were loyal to the Vichy cause, but they were attacked by British forces, which included another group of legionnaires who had thrown in a lot with the Allies. And so, the Allies ejected the French from Syria. And effectively took it over, but of course it caused quite a lot of bad blood between the two sets of legionnaires, and it was really sort of an unhappy episode in the history of the Foreign Legion.
The French Foreign Legion is a fascinating organization to me. It's sort of, but that's just a military historian. A broad question for you: are there any mysteries left from World War II that have haven't been answered, haven't been explored?
It's a hard one to say. I mean, there's been so much written on World War II, you feel that there can't be any mysteries left. But I'm sure there's probably a few odd stories which haven't been fully explained. I must admit, I'm not particularly aware of one at the moment. And I think, as far as the Legion goes, it's been well documented. So I think. Well, put it this way, I'm not aware that there are any stories there still to be told.
Well, I've been really curious, always curious about the Nazi gold, right? And all of the stories of things that have happened that kind of happened in, or for that matter, even the Nazi experiments that they were doing toward the end of World War II, not the ones, sadly, horribly done on people, but some of the early Nazi experiments that they were doing on rocketry and that kind of thing. It seems like maybe it's just an outsider's viewpoint, so that's why I ask as a military historian, are there any question marks left that don't have a sufficient answer from what they were able to do during World War II?
I think in those areas that you've been talking about, We do. I think we know the truth, but it just gets a bit embellished to make it sound a bit more fun. I mean, I'm throwing more cold water on some of these good stories, things like the Nazi gold. I mean, it seems to me that the Second World War is an extraordinary event, in itself, without having to, as it were, try to embellish it with fictitious detail. So my feeling is that certainly 99%. Of the story has been told, and these mysteries are really fictitious ones, I'm afraid to say.
One of those stories, I think one of the things that comes out from time to time, and so I know you've written about this, you don't mind me asking, is about snipers.
Sure, yeah.
I think maybe it's just the popularity of a couple of the TV shows on this, but the success or the legend of some of the snipers from World War II, I think, have turned into some really interesting books of recent that I don't know we're getting all of that much publicity for a while. You're kind of fascinated by that too, aren't you?
Yes. I mean, the sniper again is a very what I might call rather an unusual soldier. He has special responsibilities, special strains, which other soldiers don't experience. I think there's good stories of sniping during the Second World War, particularly the famous contest between the Soviet and the German sniper in Stalingrad, which was made into to the film.
I want to ask you one thing about that, and I also want to ask about a book you wrote about prisoners in Europe, and I, because I've always loved the sort of the classic escape from the Nazi prison camp stories. And there's just one question I think only maybe you, Adrian Gilbert, could give me a straight answer on coming up next. We're talking with Adrian Gilbert, military historian. The new book is about the French Foreign Legion. We'll also get back to that coming up and your questions, too, on the way. On Coast to Coast, this is Ian Ponet.